Hey guys, welcome back to the No Quitters Podcast, where we interview resilient entrepreneurs who do not know how to quit. I'm Dan Ray.
And Vinny Salcido. So guys, today we have a special guest. They're always special guests, but today, here's an entrepreneur that has multiple...
Serial entrepreneur.
Dude, serial entrepreneur is fucking right. So without further ado, Anthony Flores, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you guys. Thank you, Ray. Dan, Vinny, thanks for having me here. I mean... Good. Let's get this going. You know?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. So what we want to know is, how did you become you? Yeah. Right? Like, where did it all start from? Because you were not born into, like, you know, on a silver platter. You had to have that dog to build yourself up.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. No. I mean, we're, immigrants coming out of Mexico. Came here at a young age, at about 5 years old. And so grew up here. In Orange County, grew up in a small ranch in Mexico where, you know, we had dirt floors.
What part of Mexico?
We're from a small town in Guerrero called, it's not a pueblo, it's a rancho.
Un rancho, okay?
Because people think pueblo or like my ranch in Mexico, and, you know, there's difference, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like from a rancho where we, you know, had the, you know, animals, and we had, you know, we had to grow crops, and we had an adobe home and a straight like rancho, you know? So we grew up there, and the first part of my little kid life, you know? And we came into America when I was four and a half years old, because I still went to kindergarten here. So once we came here, we, you know, typical immigrant family, live with the uncle, with the aunts, and, you know, eventually maybe an apartment. And then my dad was able to purchase a home back in like 91 and brought us, you know, to an actual home. But, you know, like typical, he's got to survive some way or another, renting out everything, you know, like he's going to rent to this stranger, that room. And you guys are going to sleep right here in the corner of the living room. And then he built something in the back so he could just rent it out and try to make ends meet. So I grew up very modest, very humble.
That's a go-getter mentality for sure.
Absolutely. Because not typical people don't do that. No.
Yeah. So, I mean, we grew up very modest, and but we always had, you know, food on the table. My dad would be working and, you know, making things happen some way or another. So we grew up that way. And, you know, as we grew up, we you see that. And I mean, I think at the beginning, you need to have a why to see the world and see what you want to do and accomplish. So when I saw like my parents struggle through all that, you know, you start thinking like, okay, what are we going to do to get things going? And then you see the struggle. So at a young age, you're like, you're a kid. You want to have the Nintendo or whatever these kids have. So what do you got to do? You got to figure out a way to make some money. Yeah. So, you know, we went through the whole, you know, selling door-to-door chocolates, you know, and in the summers to get a Nintendo.
You were like in high school?
I was like 12. 12 years old,
school.
Carrying the little box and selling the chocolates door to door with those, they take you in a van and then they take you to like a nice neighborhood. Uh-huh. Like, okay, go sell chocolates. Say that you're part of this, you know, youth center, youth stuff. And we sold some chocolates for the summer. And then when I was 14, we started working at the car wash. And then that's where we kind of actually started like working every weekend. And sometimes we worked in the afternoons. And at the time I was like about 14. Till about 17, we did the car wash. So at least we can purchase our own stuff.
And, right.
But I've always been very, how can I say it? I've always been like trying to do the most with whatever I'm doing. You know, so at the car wash, I was like, I can't be washing cars and this tunnel and a million cars are passing by. And then they would send you to the vacuums and vacuuming cars. I was like, I want to go work at the register, you know? Yeah. So I would tell the guy, hey, like, how can I go work at the register? No. You know, typical, you know, older immigrant Mexican dude saying like, nah, you're not going to, you stay with it. And then, but then I, you know, I was sharp. I was like, oh, that's the owner, the little Asian lady right there. So went to her and said, hey, I want to work. Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe. And then sooner or later, I was charging people inside the office.
Behind the register.
Behind the register, you know, charging people when they came to pay. And so moved up there, and all my friends were working in the back, you know, at the vacuuming car. My brother, my older brother, my older friends.
Air conditioning.
Yeah, and I was in there, and like this guy, you know. So we were always on the hustle trying to figure something out. I mean, In high school, we started doing, we got into like the party crew and started, you know, making flyer parties and charging $3 to get
making
in
money.
And figuring it out. And eventually we ended up getting some venues and, you know, go to every high school and pass out flyers there. And, you know, I'll tell people, give me $20, I'll give you 40 at the end of the night. And it was just, you know, we went through that and, you know, you grow up kept going till then I started, I got graduated from high school. Went to junior college at the time. And then because of me having a really bad driving record at a young age, because I was, you know, speeding or doing whatever. And my dad was like, hey, you know what? You need to get insurance. You need to get an SR-22. And I'm like, well, what is this? He goes, because your license is suspended. But go to my friend over here in Orange. He's going to help you out. So because of that, I met one of the owners of the office, and I seen a bunch of empty desks there. And I said, hey, like, how do I get a job here? You have a lot of empty desks here. Like, why don't you give me a job? And he's like, you speak Spanish? I was like, yeah. And he goes, okay. He didn't speak Spanish. And then I was like, yeah, I can. He goes, you got to get a license. You can't work here without a license. And I said, well, give me the number or where do I go? And then that's how I got into the insurance industry, is what I've been doing for the past 23 years. Because I went there to get an insurance, and I asked the guy
for
a
job. You were 23 years old when you went there.
I was 18.
18?
Yeah, I was 18, and then I went there. He didn't give me a job. He just said, yeah. I think I remember your dad. Yeah, I'll give you a job. Come next week, or I'll call you next week. He never called me. And then so I called him, and he goes, oh, yeah, you know what? Come to the office. So I went, and then he's like, look, we're not hiring right here. But we're hiring in Downey. So I was like, where the hell is Downey? Yeah. You know, all I knew was like the little surrounding areas there. And so he's like, yeah, it's not that far. You live in Fullerton. Yeah, you'll get there. It's not bad. You have a car? Yeah, I have a car. And he goes, okay, go. And I went over there and I went to the office and the guy had no clue. The guy, he go over there and ask for this person. I get there and the guy's like, this guy never told me you were coming or nothing. So he's like, no, we're not hiring, man. And then I was like, oh, he goes, you need to get a license if you want a job in this industry. And I said, do you have the number or the school where I go? And he just gave me an 800 number. And I called, signed up. The next day I signed up because I called and they're like, when do I start school? Like, is it like, what semester or what? And they're like, no, you can enroll now. You could come tomorrow and start doing your hours. So I showed up. Wow. I had no money. I had a credit card at the time. It was a Sears credit card. I had like, I don't know, $2,000 in there. And I said, oh, the thing that school at the time was like $240. So I said, okay, let's go. I went. Yeah. Went, started at the school. And then when you're done with the school, they tell you, okay, take this application to your employer. They're going to help you out. And I'll send it to the Department of Insurance. And I was like, well, I don't have an employer. So I went back to the guy in Downey and I said, hey, they told me to show you guys these certificates that I went to school. And he goes, you went to school? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, come on. And he's like, you know, I'm going to help you out. Now, he goes, you know how many people I tell, give them this number? No one does it.
Oh.
And I was like, no, well, you told me to do it. So
I
want to get a job here. So I did it.
Wow.
So he helped me out. He filled out the rest of the stuff. I was able to get a test date. I went to San Diego at the time because you couldn't do anything online. It was either LA or San Diego at the federal buildings. And they wouldn't tell you like when, you wouldn't be able to schedule it. They just send you a letter saying like, this is your test date. So I went out there and
you had to wait on the mail.
Yeah, I wait on the mail, but I got the thing real quick. And luckily I passed it on my first try, the test.
Wow.
So I came back to the guy, I said, here's the license you wanted. And the guy was just like, no.
You did it all fast.
Yeah, I mean, this was in May. By September, I was already licensed, fully licensed. Yeah, so he's like, oh man, all right, I'm gonna help you out, come on. And he said, this is gonna be your desk. So he gave me a desk. 3 months later, I made $39, first paycheck. You know, it was all strict commission, nothing in. But you know what? I walked out of the house every morning with a shirt and a tie.
And went to work.
You know, went to work. And my parents, they're like, well, this guy's wearing a shirt and a tie, so he must be doing good.
So three months, $39.
$39, you know? So you keep going. I mean, I kept learning the system. I learned, I was learning from everybody, and I was like, I could do it with like these guys. You know, I mean, why can't, I mean, I should be able to do it. So I would learn from all these, all the agents there. And there was a few agents that only spoke a little Spanish. So I would listen to them and how they would speak to the customers, because everybody, all the clients were all immigrants. It was non-standard insurance. And we literally helped out all the non-speaking English clients, a little bit of English.
There's a ton of people right there in Downey.
Yeah. So I learned from all of them, and I started catching on to everything. And then I would start learning about the carriers, you know, and who they were and what they were about. Because I was like, I gotta educate these customers. And then learned a little bit more. 6 months later, to make sure, the Rudy was his name. He's like, Anthony, you speak good Spanish, bro. I want you to be the assistant manager, because I don't know what this guy's doing, the manager here. So I moved up really quick there. And then became a manager at like 6 months, like November or so. By then, I was already like helping him managing.
You're 19 years old at this time.
I was 19, yeah. And then so went there, learned with him in Downey, started taking over the marketing side of it, hiring some people, and talking to the all the marketers that would come in at the time. You know, mm-hmm. It wasn't so much digital. It was all like paperwork, like Clasificado, El Aviso, Penny Saver at the time, Yellow
Running
Pages.
Ads.
Yeah, talk to them, run some ads with them, tell them what we wanted on the ad. And
you know what's curious is that, I mean, you grew up like a lot of people do, right? They come over from Mexico, yeah. But when they get here, they use that as a crutch. Well, yeah. I'm here, yeah. I can't do anything. Right. They don't even want to try.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But in the environment that you were at, I wonder if you got this from your parents. You just had that no quitter mentality. You want to persevere.
Dude, absolutely.
When someone works 3 months and makes no money, right, to get a $39 check, the rest of the world would have given up. Yeah. They're like, fuck this. Yeah. I'm right. Not going to do this.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? Think about it.
Yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, I wasn't going around telling people I didn't make no money this week, or I didn't make any money.
You were on a mission.
You know, I was like, oh, I understood that the way to make money was to get sales in. Mm-hmm. And then I understood, you know, the pay structure. Mm-hmm. And I said, I guess it's just part of me being here.
Right.
And I wasn't trying to go back to college. I mean, I had done the semester of college. Mm-hmm. And that September, I was like, I don't think I want to go back. So I got to learn this. So I took that and said, you know what? Look, I'm going to get this license. I'm going to be licensed with the state. My parents are going to be okay with that. Because I'm going to have a title, and then I'm going to go ahead and take this and learn this summer, mm-hmm, and all this business. So maybe I don't have to go back to college.
Right.
Which I ended up going to kind of just talk to the counselor. Mm-hmm. And then the counselor was like, well, you're only going part time. So it's going to take you about 8 years to finish school. And I was like, 8 years?
Damn. I'm
trying to make money now.
Right, right. I gotta eat now.
Yeah, like 8 years. Oh, yeah, well, you're only going part-time, because I was working, you know, at the, mm-hmm, time too. And then I was like, okay. So I was like, I gotta make this happen, this insurance, right, stuff. So I started doing numbers. I was like, if I sell this, I'll make this. If I sell this many, mm-hmm, clients, you know, I'm gonna do this.
Gotcha.
And then so I said, well, I gotta do flyers. So I made up some flyers. Passed them all out at 5 a.m. and at 9 p.m. to all different cars at night. Passed them out, and then I started. Every day, yeah.
For how long?
For about 3 months.
Non-stop.
Because then what I discovered was the swap meets. You know, the Paramount swap meet.
Oh, yeah.
And the Santa Fe Springs.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, okay.
There's a bigger crowd here.
Yeah, it's a bigger crowd. So I would go with my big computer, because we didn't have a laptop then. A computer and a little table and a canopy and a flyers. And I just give them to the clients there. Here you go. You know, insurance. And this was Saturday mornings and Sunday mornings. Mm-hmm. And on Monday, I had clients, you know, waiting for me, lined up.
Nice, you know? Nice.
So it worked out. The swap meets made it all happen. That worked. Yeah. You know,
what I'm curious about is, I mean, you grew up in an environment, everybody, you know, goes, starts using drugs, starts partying, starts doing all this stuff, right? Yeah. I mean, you were doing flyers for the party scene, right?
Yeah.
And you never fell into any of that.
No. What, thank God.
Right. Thank God. But what in you, right? Where did you get it? Like, hey, that's not for me. I'm built for something bigger.
You know what? We were very involved with, you know, gangs. You know, there was gangs.
You were around them.
You know, we were around them. You know, we were a group. You know what really helped was the fact that we were in sports. We played every sport, every single sport, regardless. And then, you know, you find your sport, you know, we played basketball, rain or shine. Dude, I remember playing basketball. It was raining, and we were playing out there in the park.
At the park.
You know, it really helps to have, you know, teenagers be really involved in sports because of the discipline and because you get so competitive.
Yeah.
Well, you fall in love with
them. Yeah, you fall in love that you want to win. Yeah. So you want to be in sports because they show you that feeling of winning. So instead of us, you know, going messing around on a Friday night, we were at the Boys and Girls Club because they had a program from 7 to 11 p.m. where you go play basketball, and they set up, like, you know, you brought your little team and you played ball. Pick Fridays and Saturday nights, right? Wow. So we were very involved with that. But yeah, don't get me wrong, there was always the distractions, you know, like this. We go back a little bit into, like, you know, like gangs and stuff. Yeah, they wanted us to join gangs, but we said no. And then if they said anything, we said, well, we know how to fight, and we're very athletic. We have stamina. And in fighting, if you can hang, you're going to win. You know, so most of these guys are not in sports, so you just, you know, swept
you
them
never
up
back
real quick.
Down. You never back
never,
down.
Never, 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 never.
And you had to throw down.
All the time. You know, I got kicked out of all my high school, you know, for fighting.
But you weren't being punked, like, hey, you got to join. No, no.
Never, never, never. No, you. Never,
back
never.
Down. See, that's what I'm curious about, man. Like, at a young age, mm-hmm. right, like, you were young.
Yeah.
How were you able to just build that within you to be like, you know what? I'm going to fight for what I stand for, because you're throwing down for what you're standing
for. Yes, correct, correct. A lot of times, a lot of fights.
What was it in you? Like, was it growing up and seeing the struggle that your parents went through that you're like, no, I'm committed to this?
Well, you know what? I mean, when we came into this country, mm-hmm. we didn't speak any English. And I remember being okay the kindergarten and first grade that I went to a more Hispanic area mm-hmm. school. I don't remember any bullying, but when we got into, when my dad bought the house and we went to a different area, we were being bullied by a lot of people you know, second grade, third grade. So we were fighting at recess. We weren't playing. We're fighting.
You know? Throwing that.
And me and my brother laugh about it now, but we were fighting, you know, these kids. And throughout high school, the elementary, we were fighting, you know, and there was a lot more racism going on at the time, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember one time I went to the principal's office, a funny story. There's this big white dude, you know, Michael Bills, and big tall guy, and he called me like a wet bag and like a jumping beaner and this and that. So then I was like, you know what, I'm tired of this guy. at recess, I'm gonna you know, handle this guy. So we start fighting, and I hit him one time. One good hit, and he backs down and he starts crying at the time. And I go to the principal's office, and the principal, Dr. Backus, he was like, what happened? And I was like, why did you hit him? And I said, well, because he called me a jumping beaner. And he goes, I would have done the same thing. Go back to your class. You know?
Oh, he understood.
Yeah. He understood.
He didn't give you a hard time.
Yeah. And and then I was like, when kids came that really didn't speak
you built some rep at that point. You already had some rep built up.
Yeah, my kids came in. Till this day, I have a friend right now that we talk about it sometimes. He came in from Tijuana, and he didn't speak so much English. We were in fifth grade, and they tried to bully him. And I told them, like, you know what, leave him alone. And if you guys have an issue, then you come to me. And if not, you guys are going to have to, you know, figure something out, because you guys are not going to bully him or do anything. And he still remembers this till this day, and he still calls me. You know, just recently he'll call me and like, hey, I haven't forgot what you did for me as a kid. Wow. Like, you really, you know, beat those kids up for me. And, yeah. And like, you know, and now he's a great friend. I mean, we've been friends since fifth grade.
Yeah.
But he's still around. He still remembers that. So I figured, you know, as you get old, you start building that respect for, you know, you get into a fight as a young kid, mm-hmm. and you win that fight, people start respecting. They don't want to mess with you.
Yeah.
So, you know, one thing about us, at least our group of friends, we never back down from nobody. I mean, it was who it was. And if we all lost, we lost. And if we all won, we won. And I still have that towards me, because I see it like, in business, it has a lot to do with being that way,
mm-hmm.
because I do a lot of business with a lot of different people, and I'm very old school. If I give you my word, that's what's going to happen. You know, I'm not going to, you know, even if we're going and everything's going sour, then we're going to go sour together. It is what it is. I'm not, you know, going to back down from stuff or anything, because that's just how I grew up. Like, I have your back. You're my friend. And if someone's hurting you, I'm going to go help you regardless.
Right.
Even if it's not my problem, I'm just going to go help you. So I think that's helped us, you know, as you get older, to be a good person and not screw people over.
Right.
Keep your name clean.
Right. Like, you build that identity at such a young age.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really helped us out. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure there was drugs involved, temptations, but I always thought about my dad and my mom.
That's why.
And I was like, no, I can't let them down. They brought us to this. Cause you want to talk to your kids, because my parents, I used to hear the struggles. And they used to tell us, when we brought you over, we had to do this and we had to do that. And I mean, I remember crossing the border and like hiding underneath the little sewer area. So I'm like, oh, my parents didn't bring me over here to be some lowlife and druggie or drug addict or nothing like that. So I was just always cautious about that. At the same time, probably scared to do drugs. I thought maybe if you do drugs,
at a young age,
you'll maybe get involved and like you'll get addicted and you ruin your life. So
I become a loser.
Yes. So I guess I should be proud to say that I've never done any drugs.
You should be.
Nothing, you know, nothing. And as I grew up, when I was got into the industry, one of my other friends told me, Anthony, you're 21 now, or 20 at the time. He goes, nothing can stop you. The only thing that can stop you, if you fall into drugs, and which I was already saint to that. I was like, nah, I'm good with that. And he goes, or you start having kids. You know, that's going to hold you back a little bit. But right now, nothing can stop you. You got to go.
You're on fire.
And he saw, because I was already like top salesman. He saw that I was at the swap meets and I was an example for the little company that I was working for at the time. And then that's why I kept going with that mentality to nothing can stop me. And really, really took it to another level, you know?
So that was at 19. At what age did you open your first office? Your
21.
First? And that was at 21 years old. And that was in downtown, you mentioned.
Right.
Yeah. So
what are 21-year-olds doing now?
Bro, going out.
Right.
Yeah.
Sleeping
in. Yeah, it's different. Yeah.
What the fuck?
Complaining? Yeah.
Complaining.
Absolutely. No, 21, I opened up. I was doing good as a manager at that location. I was good, but I told my boss at the time, I told him, hey, Rudy, what's next? Like, what's after this? I mean, are we going to keep growing? I mean, you told me to hit 100 policies. I hit them in a week. I said, there you go.
What's next?
So I was like, you keep giving me these Nordstrom ties. They're $100 that I would never even imagine having or wearing. Yeah. But I mean, I gotta make some money, you know?
Right.
And then he's like, well, you got to talk to so-and-so because you could probably open up an office with him. So I said, okay. I said, all right, I'm gonna talk to him. So I talked to the person at the time, the president of the company, and he's like, yeah, Anthony, you can, you talk to Rudy. I said, yeah. And he's like, okay, well, yeah, you can come. We can look into you opening an office. How much money you got saved up? And I said, I got some money. And he goes, okay, you have to have enough money, to open and to sustain. And I said, well, I mean, at the time I had like $30,000 to my name. And I was like, well, I have money, like, let's do it.
Yeah.
So he's like, okay, we'll go find the location for you. So I'm still working, managing that Downey office, but then they went and found that location. So they're like, look, we have to put you in downtown. And I said, oh, come on, downtown? I live in Fullerton in Orange County. No, 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 but this is the only area because you can't be too close to this office. You can't be too close to this office. You have to respect, the territories, and this is where you can go.
You think they did that like in a bad way or?
No.
They were trying to just cover more area probably and not step on each other's
toes. Exactly. They
were
looking more as
downtown LA is kind of.
They were looking at more as a business, like where does the company need something right
now? Got it.
You know? And yeah, of course, they wanted to not get me to be too close to the Downey office because I grew that office.
Yeah.
And, most of my clients were from Southgate, Downey, Norwalk, and it's East LA. And so, so they opened the office over there, like, okay, Anthony, the office is open. You just got to furnish it and you got to, start doing your thing. So I go in there, I buy the desks and everything. And then I start advertising where I know, call my reps and so on. and hire one of my friends that had nothing to do with where I was working. He was working at another agency, and I hired him, brought him on board. And this was November and April, I had maybe $2,000 left. And I told my friend, you know what, Chris, I can't afford you anymore. I'm just going to do it myself here for right now. Just go get another job, but I'm gonna make this happen somehow or another. And then I'll call you if I need you again. And he's like, yeah, no problem. He saw the struggle. He saw what we were doing. You know, he saw how we would, you know, get in fights with security to let us stay there. They locked us in. I had to call the fire department one time because they locked us in the building. Jeez. And I tried to tell the security, hey, I'll pay you $20 an hour. How much you make? At the time, he probably made like $12, $15. And then I said, look, I'll give you this much. Just stay. Just stay with the keys. So, because I have customers here. I can't tell them to leave. So it was a struggle with him. And I just said, you know what? I'm done. The guy Rudy called me, like, Anthony, don't worry about it. Just come back. Get your job is here. And I was like, I'm going to have to go back to there. And I was like, no, I got to figure something out. So I called the president of the company. I said, Chris, this is not going to work. And he's like, you know what? What's the problem, Anthony? Why are you failing? You're top salesman for us. You know, when you were working in Downey, you know, what's going on? And I said, you know what? It's the location. And he goes, are you sure it's the location? I said, yes, it's the location. I said, look, I'm 21 years old. I want to work from 8 in the morning to 10 p.m. And I'm going to stay in this office until I sell some policies. And if they're kicking me out at 5 p.m., well, I mean,
that's half your schedule.
I can't grow like this. So he's like, are you sure that's the problem? And I said, yeah. And he goes, okay, Anthony, go open an office. Just don't open up in Southgate, and don't open up in Lynwood, and don't open up in Downey. And I said, are you sure? And he goes, yeah. And I said, okay. So I take off, and I go to East LA in front of King Taco. On third and fourth. And I said, this little office right here, I used to pay $1,500 a month for the one in downtown. This one was $650. I said, I'm going to cut my costs. I already had all the furniture. I said, I call the place, and they're like, yeah, we'll lease it to you, $650. Cool. I start moving everything on, bringing all my furniture, and all by myself. I didn't have any employees at the time. And it was a small, maybe 500 square foot office.
What's going through your mind when you're like by yourself? You're 21 years old. What floor were you in?
I was on the second floor.
Picking up all your furniture by yourself, bro.
Yeah, going little by little.
Carrying it by yourself.
Oh, yeah.
What's going through your mind with that at that point?
You know what? I saw it as an opportunity. I was like, you know what? I failed over there. But over here, this is it. I was excited, scared at the same time, but I was more excited because I knew that I could, I knew what I had to do. It was just the fact that they closed that downtown LA office at 5 p.m.
Yeah. So do you really consider it as a failure, or were you just in the wrong environment? Because a lot of that doesn't
help
you grow.
Well, you have to learn. You have to learn that you were in a bad environment, right. Or you have to learn. Most people could just say, well, I'm going to quit. This didn't work out.
Right.
And that's it.
Exactly.
And at the beginning, they didn't tell you, oh, the building shuts down at 5? Or they just said, oh, yeah, here's your key.
But you thought you could still stay. No, they didn't tell me. They told
the insurance company.
They told, my partner at the time.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know? Even knowing that, they're going to put you
in
an environment.
Yeah, they put me in that situation, I don't know what they thought, you know. And then downtown L.A., you're talking about a whole different clientele, than in Downey.
Yeah.
In Downey, I was able to, with these customers, I was able to relate to them.
Yeah, raza.
Mexicanos, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And then when I go to downtown LA, I got people from Bolivia, everything. Peru, Arabic, El Salvador. Everything. You know, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Which I was good at building relationship with these customers. And yeah, thank God, probably some of my clients from downtown LA, they're still my clients now. But I was able to bring them into East LA. I got this little location. 6 months later, I was trying to knock the walls down, you know, to grow.
It wasn't big enough.
Because
I
brought my friend back. When he went, yeah, I brought my friend back. Not there, not just there yet. I just hired a receptionist, and I was just doing it all. And I was like, I got to do five policies a day. I would advertise, I would track everything, micromanage everything, follow up on all the clients, making sure that I had a pipeline all the time, you know, and I was like, okay, goals. I gotta do five policies a day, and grew slowly. And then eventually I opened up, you know, another location on a brand new building, a shell. And then I brought my friend Chris back as a manager for that location.
Oh, nice.
You know?
Wow.
And, in the industry, in the insurance industry, people that know the industry and I mean, nowadays, I opened up 10 locations for this franchise, for this company.
Jeez. Wow.
Okay. I was in East LA, two in East LA, one in Commerce. I had all the 323 area code territory. So I ended up going to Huntington Park, Maywood, over at Lincoln Heights, and I was in Highland Park.
Oh yeah.
I was in East LA, and then I had another East LA office, and then Commerce. So I had 10 locations in Bell, and my territory was doing 5,000 policies a month, and that in the insurance industry,
that's massive numbers.
That's unheard of. Crazy numbers, you know. I mean, I was doing more than 500 policies a month per office, you know. Bro. I mean, it's a different
a year.
You know, I have 10 offices right now. I have 10 offices right now, and with all 10 offices, we're probably doing about 600 to 800 apps. Okay? So you could see the big hit that we took in 2009 when the recession 12, what is it? 8 9 10?
Eight.
Yeah. So you know, I grew my territory massively. Started advertising and now Univision, Telemundo, you know, TV Azteca, La Que Buena, all the radio stations in Spanish. Just, you know, massive advertising.
Yes.
Crazy. I mean, phones were ringing. After the commercial went on, the phones were going nuts. I had 15 agents in one office at one point. It was different times. And then we ended up having to sell the all the business. Because we grew to 50 locations in a matter of, I think it was maybe we opened up in 2004 because it was kind of a long story, but we left a company called Speedway Insurance and we opened up franchising West Coast Insurance.
Okay.
So with West Coast, we opened up in 04. 04. Yeah, 04, 05. And we did a huge run for 3-4 years. We opened up 55 locations, you know, all over California. And then
Those were your locations?
No. Mine were 10. Oh,
you helped grow West Coast.
Yeah, we ended up growing as a franchise, as a company, to 55 locations.
Damn.
And with different partners. And
I'm sure you were a big element there, motivating people.
Yeah, you know what? At the time of when the recession came and people wanted to sell, I didn't want to sell. I was fine. I mean, I was good. I was like, well, why I'm not going to sell. And they're like, 7 of us want to sell and 3 of you guys don't. We have to sell. So we sold. We sold to Freeway Insurance. I stayed at Freeway for a 10-month contract with them. They paid me to stay there and help them. And then I told them after my contract that they wanted to keep hiring me and keep me there. But I said, no, I'm going to go open up my own business again. And they're like, why? How? You're not going to be able to do it. You need millions of dollars. And I said, well, how do you know I don't have millions of dollars? And then he's like, oh, come on, Anthony. You have a great pay here. You have everything. Like, you're a regional here. I said, no, I'm going to go open up my own business, you know. And I'm going to, yeah. He goes, so you're going to lose this salary? I was like, yeah. I'm going to go and I already knew how much money we could
make. You had the bigger picture, bro. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So I went. They said, well, you have a compete. You have no compete. I said, yeah, I'm going to respect that. And I said, but I'm telling you, that guy and that guy and that guy, they're all leaving. You know, they're not going to stay because they just don't want to work with you guys. And if I'm leaving, they don't want to stay. So don't come at me with like a lawsuit or something. Because all of the partners, they were all getting sued by Freeway. But So I'm always very transparent.
That's something that you didn't want to sell, right?
Obviously. I didn't want to sell. No, I had my office.
You were forced to sell.
Yeah. How
would things be now if you guys wouldn't have sold?
Oh, yeah. We would have been probably one of the largest agencies in nationwide, you know?
Wow.
I mean, Freeway is probably the biggest now.
Freeway's
big. They have over probably over now over 1,000 offices.
That's the importance. That's the importance of keeping a strong
team. We were bigger. They just had a lot of board of directors and investors that came in and gave us the money and bought us out. They bought us. They bought a company Cost You Less Insurance. They had 80 locations. Yeah. So they grew dramatically. And they're probably the biggest nationwide now. But we did a little dent in the industry for, you know, about 3 years. We were everywhere.
Yeah.
And we were all young, you know, young, dumb in a way when it came to business.
Not that dumb.
we knew how to sell. We knew how to, you know, go out there and work.
Right. What do you think has changed in the last years, right? Because back then you're 21, you're starting up your new business, and you don't see that nowadays, right? What do you think has changed?
There's a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, I mean, at the time, a lot of real estate went down.
Oh yeah.
Drained. Well, so right. What did they do? They just said, "Oh, I have the office. What am I going to do? Let me put in taxes. Let me put in insurance." So then they kind of tapped into our industry and affected the industry in a way, because they were giving away policies and the clients will switch you for a penny, you know? So eventually you say, well, it's not a big deal. But at the end of the day, when you have all these real estate offices turning into insurance offices, it becomes a different
right. Different so situation. Now there's just nickel and dime people, so bring it down.
And then technology, and then, you know, just, our own carrier started competing against us. Mm. Insurance is very competitive when it comes to marketing, because now we are a small, you know, non-standard agency, and now we got to compete with the big companies, State Farm, Farmers, the Allstates, the Progressives, and then even the non-standard carriers started advertising and the Spanish
communities.
Wow. and TV stations. So a lot of factors, a lot of different factors that ended up kind of, and then economy as well. Some companies went out of business, like the big carriers, and some people lost contracts, and then, you know, just overall, different era.
Gotcha. Has there ever been a time where you just thought about quitting?
There was a lot of times where you're like, man.
Can you think of one specifically that maybe that, like, fuck, I'll never forget that?
You know what, when we sold that, I didn't want to sell, and they put me, kind of like cornered me, like, you're going to have to sell. And I tried to do as much as I could not to sell. I mean, it's funny too, because I was like, I even sold my leases. Like I said, I'm not even going to sign the lease over to you guys until you guys pay me this much for each lease on top of the sell. Like I was trying to sustain, and it felt like they just kind of like took it from me. So when you're at that point, you're like, well, that's it.
Well, they leveraged using you because you had 10 of those 50 offices.
Yeah, there was other friends and partners that had 10, another had 8, 10, some, you know. Overall, and that's when you kind of say, like, well, what am I going to do now? Like, it's really happening. Like, we're selling. We're actually selling, and not only
am I selling, now I can't even compete.
Exactly,
that's a bigger part.
Exactly, so that's another thing that I had to figure out. How am I going to continue? The good thing that I always had was like, and I always think this way: I'm healthy, I'm still young, I could do this again. Like, and I've never been afraid to work. You know, I love it. You know, I said, what am I going to do? So, yeah, I ended up selling. Then I ended up, you know, sitting there and doing nothing for those 2 years? Absolutely not, you know? I figured out a way how to be somebody's consultant, you know?
Got it.
How to partner up in a different way, you know? And
so if you were 21 again right now and you know this, how would you do things differently this time?
I think it's mostly just on structure and operations, you know? Learning more, you know, the whole LLC concept, like having an LLC, having a corporation, running things right with, you know, management systems and different things, and creating an actual company the right way at the beginning. I mean, we were just running with, you know, at the beginning. I thank God I had a DBA somehow. I don't know who told me about it, but I had a DBA that saved me. I mean, from audits, IRS, I mean, we're making all kinds of money, not knowing, you know, like We just knew how to make it and run and go and keep going and keep going.
Taxes, so, the rest of the stuff wasn't
exactly,
even in, though.
So all that came again, too. So what does that make you do? It makes you, when you get an IRS audit or something, you want to go work at McDonald's. You're like, the hell with this. I don't want to deal with these guys. They came over here with, you know, they're officers, or, I mean, they, you know, you're young, you don't know, you're like, shit, what's going to happen here? They're going to take me to jail or what, for making money? Like, you know, everything goes through your head and you're like, shit, what do I do? I'd rather just say I don't want nothing, surrender everything, and I just want to go work at McDonald's or anywhere where I could just get paid. So, you know, those are the things that make you want to quit, you know, when stuff like that happens where you have no control and you're like, well, what am I going to do?
Right. Do you how many partners were there? 10 partners, right?
Yeah.
You own 10 locations, and then the rest were spread amongst the rest.
Yeah. Some of them had 10, right. Maybe 8, 10.
Yeah, but even though they had the same amount, your 10% was probably doing 50% of the business.
Yeah, because they were in different towns. I mean, we were doing a lot of policy. I had LA, you know, big market.
Yeah, what is that? Their production, how did that compare to theirs? Like, were you doing the
best? You know what? No, some of them were doing very well. Like Orange County area, which was the guy that first offered me the job. He was the brother of the president. He had also He had good offices that were doing, you know, 400 or 500 policies a month as well. He was doing okay. The guy Rolando from he moved to San Diego. He started doing very well over there too. He probably had about 7 offices or so. There was top guys, maybe 5 of us that were crushing it. And then we
more than likely the ones that they didn't want to sell.
2 of us, you know, 3 of us didn't want to sell. The guy from the Valley, myself, and the guy from San Diego. And the other one, the brother, well, he was the brother. He was going to get the bigger pie, you know.
He started it all.
Yeah, he started with the brother. And then, you know, maybe one of the other guys there that had a decent amount of book of business too. But, I mean, it's stuff that you have no control of. I mean, makes you want to quit. Makes you want to just, like, you know, change industries. Maybe they're just like, this was it. I still think that roller coaster wasn't long enough. I mean, it was a short period of time.
It's a good wave.
You know? And I was like, you know, it was a good wave. I'm going to do it all over again. And I redid it twice already, because during those no compete, I ended up taking an agency from one location to 13 offices. And I did that for 3 years.
So you had the concept. It was simple. It was
the concept. You knew
that. You mastered that.
I did it all on my own. A lot of these guys, the president would go and tell them, like, oh, I'll open the office. I'll pay for the sign. I never asked them for a penny, you know. I didn't ask the franchise guy for nothing. I said, you know, I don't ask my dad for a penny ever since, you know, I can remember. I'm not going to ask you for money, bro. And he would be like, Anthony, everybody here comes and cries to me, like, pay for this, pay for that. You never. And you just come here, collect your money every month, and you walk out. I said, I don't need to. I'm going to go do it myself. If I have to pick up the hammer and start hammering, if I have to go do whatever I got to do, I'm going to do it. You know, that's just how I grew up. And so it bugged me when he wanted to sell, like he forced me to sell. But I just said, you know what, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it again. And I did it with that agency that I joined, which was my compadre at the time. He had one location. I grew him to 13 offices. I ran with him for even a little past over my no-compete. And then after that, in 2016, I started Help You Save Insurance. And then now that's what I have now. We have 10 locations in Southern California, mostly LA and Orange County here. And we have one small location in Lake Tahoe and another one in Moreno Valley. But it's different, you know. I don't want to open up no more offices. You know, I see great locations and spaces, and I'm like, man, that would be a great insurance. But I'm not going to do it because you don't have the young generation with the drive to work like us.
See, that's exactly what we want to get down to. Like, dude, what do you think has changed there, right?
You hit something big right now.
Yeah, that the new generation doesn't want to put in the work, right? They want the easy, the quick microwave mindset. They want things instantly. Right.
Imagine you hired 5 guys that were just as hungry as you were.
Yeah. I mean,
imagine you can go back on the now. You can go back and hire people from that age.
What happened? Yeah, what happened?
It's different. It's different. There's no. I don't know if there's no motivation. I don't know if it's the technology behind everything. People making money on the internet. Mm-hmm. People are doing remote work and stuff like
people
that.
People want to be influencers.
Yes. Like, yes.
Exactly. And you know what? I don't want to take. I did a lot of training, and I got to the point where like I'm wasting my time. Keep training these guys. Put in my time with these guys and teach
they don't
them,
give a shit.
And they don't care. They'll quit on you in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So I kind of, you know, that's why I started diversifying into other businesses.
Mm.
And I said, you know what? I when I opened up Help You Save, I injected some money, capital into it, started going hard in marketing and everything, built that foundation fast. Because it's a numbers game in insurance. You want to build that book quick so you can, you know, have a book to survive. And so I grew that real quick. And then I started diversifying into other industries, other businesses. And that's why I was able to now diversify into 7+ companies, you know.
Right.
7+ different businesses, from restaurants to different things.
Correct. Yeah, see, I know a lot of serial entrepreneurs, man, but you go from insurance to you got your own what is it, that the birria thing?
Oh, the ramen
business, yeah. Ramen beer, yeah.
Karaoke ramen spot. Business.
Karaoke spot. You're like everywhere, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, people, yeah, they think I'm crazy, or you know, sometimes I think I'm crazy, you know.
You gotta be crazy.
Dive into all this different type of ventures, you know. But I enjoy it. If I gotta have a productive day, if I don't have a productive day, mm-hmm. I feel useless. So sometimes some businesses, you get them to run on autopilot, and that's the goal. I delegate like crazy, delegate everything. And a lot of my businesses run on autopilot because that's how I learn to run my operations. I've done it where if I was the first one at the office and the last one to leave.
Yeah.
And if I worked, they worked. You know, this last time around, I learned to be in the back. And, you know, it takes longer to build a business when you're not there every day and be the last one to leave. But it's a different model. You know, now the agents go to work. They know they're not going to see me. And if they see me, they're going to work harder. But, you know, they're there to work. They run the business like if it was theirs because of the pay structures I put in place. You want to give, you know, always for someone to, you know, help you grow. You have to take out of your pocket and give, and willing to take some hits. You know, take a pay cut to grow eventually. Hopefully, if you do it right, you'll start making the money back and some. But a lot of people are afraid to delegate the work. They're afraid to open maybe a new location because they're like, how, or I'm going to lose money over here if I leave. But you have to. You have to be able to take a pay cut when you need to. You have to be able to delegate that work and hope that this person that you're delegating the work gets it done. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to have the patience to let them, you know, do things on their own. And eventually they'll get it. They'll get it. Maybe not as good as you, but they'll get it to where, you know, they're running the business. And you have the freedom to be with your family, your friends, go out here, or start a new venture, you know? Right. That's the only way you're going to do it. You got to find operators. You got to find people that...
Would you say that's one of your biggest strengths, is that you're okay delegating and letting them learn?
As I got older, yeah. You know, I realized, like, when you're young, you want a lot of it to you, and you're like, shh, this guy's going to steal from me. Or he's going to steal from me. Or he's going to do this. You have to overcome that. I have a bakery.
People stealing from you.
I have a bakery. You know, I go there once a week for 1 hour. That's it. The bakery runs on its own.
Where's that bakery at?
Yeah, right here in Anaheim.
What are the names of your restaurants, the businesses, so people can know? Tell us.
Well, my main business, the insurance agency, it's Help You Save Insurance.
Help You Save Insurance.
Okay, we're a full service agency. We not only do, you know, auto, we do pretty much everything except for life. So we do Medicare. We do commercial insurance. We do workers' comp, general liability. We do bonds. Mm-hmm. We do auto. We do home. renters, pretty much anything except for life.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
You know, it'll come. And then I have my restaurant, Cielo Karaoke y Más in Fullerton. I have another restaurant, small taqueria, Los Chacas Tacos y Más, also in that's in Anaheim. And then my bakery, Carrusel Bakery, Carrusel. It's also in Anaheim. I have I had another restaurant called Cavana in Laguna Beach, beautiful restaurant, fail there. And then now I'm opening up in Santa Ana, another restaurant called Arte. Very nice.
Okay.
Downtown Santa Ana, beautiful building. And then I have I'm opening up a coffee shop called Encanto.
Okay.
Cool, you know, Mexican concept for a coffee shop out in Anaheim as well. And then my ramen business is I'm the first Mexican in the world to own a ramen business. Okay. So we do ramen, instant ramen, and we do traditional Mexican flavors. Menudo, pozole, birria.
Oh my God.
And
flavors of the ramen.
Si. Yeah, the flavors. So all the ingredients go from here to Vietnam. Vietnam, they do the noodles because in Mexico, no one does noodles instant.
They don't.
So I send everything over there, all the ingredients. They package them with the ramen, and then they ship them back over here. And now I'm in about 5,000 point of sales from big chain stores like Vallartas, Cardenas.
So you're in the supermarket.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What's absolutely the name of the packaging?
Cielo.
Cielo. Cielo Ramen.
Yeah. Cielo Ramen.
Yeah. Yeah. Cielo Ramen. I'm big in Texas. That's my number one state. Texas. I have a big chain store called HEB over there. That's my number one customer. Yeah. They buy over $500,000 in ramen a year. Wow. And then I'm big in Chicago. So that's, wow, you know, something completely different. Mm-hmm. But it's fun, you know. It's fun, it's different, and
¿Cómo te entró eso? Where did you get that
concept? One of my friends, which is a partner of mine, he went out to Vietnam, and he came back. He went out to do a shrimp, like a seafood business. Thought he was going to go buy seafood and bring it over here. And he was going, he was telling me, like, you know what I saw, Anthony? A bunch of ramen factories. And I said, oh, okay, ramen. And he goes, yeah, a lot of ramen factories. So he's like, maybe we should do like a ramen. And I was like, maybe we should. I said, okay, let's look into it. And we looked at some manufacturers. It took us over a year to find a good manufacturer. But we ended up getting one, a really good one. In Vietnam, we looked at China, Korea, everywhere, but you know, we found one in Vietnam. And I mean, the guy doesn't know anything about, you know, these flavors that so we had to kind of like,
What the hell's menudo?
We really had to engineer them, yeah, and do a lot of samples. And you know, we try using Vietnam ingredients, and they're just a little different.
Yes.
But so we were able to find spice companies out here that were able to, you know, create these flavors for us. And it took a little while, about 2 years to actually get it up and running. But we started in 2023. We got a broker that sold one container full. And then after that, 24, we sold over $1 million in ramen. 24
banging ramen all over the world.
Yeah. You know, and now we're doing well. We're in the stage of growth, promoting, marketing, stuff like that, and growing into new accounts. Walmart wants us. We rejected Walmart because we don't want to grow into them just yet. Oh. We did a little trial period with them with 20 stores, sold out. But we want to be sure we're ready. You know, we want to make sure that we can fulfill these orders, because if ramen says, you know what, send me, I need 10 containers, you know, we have to do it. Oh, absolutely. We could do it. I mean,
is the manufacturer, getting ready for that?
The manufacturer can do 100 containers a month. He's big. It's just most us. We don't want to grow that fast. You know, we want to make sure we can take on a client like that.
You don't want to jeopardize quality.
Absolutely. No, we want to make sure that we're ready for it. And
that's integrity right there, man. Because you got ready. You got
anybody else would just take the check. Go
yeah, no, then, no, no.
Oh,
no,
we
no,
fucked
no.
it up.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you got stuff like that where we're rejecting Walmart, and then you have stuff like that's we're trying to get into Norgate, and Norgate can't, you know, give us a, you know, a, can't get, we can't get into Norgate, you know? What? You figure, like, come on, Norgay, come on, Norgay, you guys are, you know, help us out here. But, yeah. You know, but we're, you know what, we're slow. We got into Cardenas, big chain store, Vallarta's, you know, 70 stores here in, mm-hmm. in California. We're another chain stores here in California that have 95 stores. And then small little stores like Big Savers that have, you know, 8 markets or so. So it's, you know, different industry, different things. I learned how to, you know, deal with buyers and, you know, purchase orders and this and that. I mean, it's, you know, it's, I guess it's fun. It's fun to, you know, get into these other industries.
Gotcha.
So I'm just trying to make sure something, you know, something hits big, you know.
It's been hitting big, yeah. But you're a visionary. You see bigger, and you kind of mentioned that you're getting into the tech industry.
Right. Yeah. I'm.
You're not afraid to jump into anything.
No. I just, you have to. I mean, I just got into a technology company mm-hmm. that I think it's gonna do very well, and those technology companies are really good exit routes. You know, at one point, you know, you could sell those for a lot of money.
A lot.
And you know, right now I'm gonna be exiting a tequila that I invested into, and Tequila Comisario. We're hoping we go public soon, so I can just dump all my shares, you know, and cash out of there, maybe 8x my investment or so.
That's a great tequila, by the way.
Yeah. So
you brought a bottle on Thursday.
You tried it, yeah.
But I tried it before también.
No, yeah, it's a great really spirit. It's a very good tequila. I wouldn't invest. If it wasn't,
and the packaging, the bottling is beautiful.
The tequila is very good.
Yeah,
it's 100% agave, very pure, very, very good. We have a 7-year-old, 7-age añejo, extra añejo.
I love that.
It's beautiful. It's like beautiful.
Yeah. And they're really already good. In Vegas. They're in the casinos.
Yeah, like, we're in Vegas.
They're blowing up.
Yeah, we were in Vegas and a lot of we sell a lot in Boston as well. But that's, you know, they, you know, the partners handle all that, you know.
Beautiful.
Just a little investment that I got there going, but we can't quit, right?
That's right.
We gotta keep going.
No quitting,
right?
So, gotta keep going.
So what's next?
You know what? I'm growing very rapidly, and I gotta slow down.
Okay.
You know, gotta slow down, and then start, you know, really getting things into place. Where, you know, you start building businesses, okay? Mm-hmm. Because anybody can open a business, but a sustainable business, you know, that you could call a business and you could sell, you know?
That's worth something.
You know, that's worth something. That, you know, you have the right structure and everything is, you know, everything that you could sell, you know, at one point. Because, you know, the restaurant business, for example, they get hypes. You got a huge hype, like everybody wants to go to this place. Like this is the spot. Yeah, you get that hype for six, maybe 3 to 6 months, and then it just falls apart. And then
you got to come up with a new concept.
So I don't believe in just being a concept for a couple months.
Right.
I believe in building the business, and you know, yes, the numbers are going to be steady, but it's a business now. You know, your numbers are good every month. You're going to have just about the same numbers or maybe a little higher because you did an event or you did whatever. And now it becomes a business because now sometimes it takes, you know, a couple years, but now it's an actual business that's running on its own.
Yeah.
That it's going to not, you know, it's going to go through recessions and it's go through this and you're going to be solid. So I think what's next is me just focusing on keep building what I have and making sure that it has a solid foundation mm-hmm. for it to sustain and possibly, you know, sell or, you know, make some money from them, you know, at the end of the day, you know, that's what we do. I mean, at the end of the day, we have to make money.
Absolutely.
You know? We have to make some money.
So as a serial entrepreneur that's gone through so many challenges, what would you tell our viewers or someone that's going through a struggle in a business and they don't know, should I just give up or maybe I should get out of it? Or what would you give them as advice?
I think you just got to ask questions, you know, ask around, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help. A lot of people will give you help for nothing, for free. I mean, people, if someone calls me and tells me, Anthony, how did you do this? This and that, I'll tell them all day long. I mean, I was just talking to one of my friends, and we were together, and someone called me, and they were asking me, hey, how do I do this? How do I do that? And I was like, oh, do it this, do it like this, and do this, and I'll do that. And my friend looks at me after I hung up, and he goes, did you just tell him all of that for free? And I was like, yeah, why not? And he goes, bro, people will charge for stuff like that. I was like, I wish somebody would have told me this when I was, you know, growing right. up. So we have to, I mean, I don't know. I just think that people like us, we really have to stick together yeah. and really, really
help
each other out, right. you know? There's enough for everybody. I mean, I'm to the stage where there's enough clients or business for everyone,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
And you want to stick close to your people and you know, educate each other. Go to these, you know, network events, you know, out there to learn. You always learn, no matter what. You, there's always something you learn, no matter what it is or who you are or what industry you're in. There's always, I love to talk to people that are in my industry.
Right.
You know, I love to talk to, oh, how do you do this? Oh, how did you, oh, I do this. Oh, what marketing company do you use? Oh, I'm using them. Like, yeah. be surprised that if you just ask, people right. just tell you.
Yeah. Right.
You know?
You know, back in the day, you walk in an office, you see a lot of people that are performing, and it would be common for people that just started to go and ask the top performer, like, hey, how do you do it?
Yeah.
Right. I think that's one of the things that we lost nowadays, because people are really afraid of asking questions.
The reality is, the ones that have done very well and have struggled are the ones that are more willing to help.
Yes.
And the yeah. ones that are doing well, there's a lot of selfishness in all industries.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
they don't want to see someone do better than them. Mm-hmm. Like, I know people who have a brokerage that once their top salesperson does more than them, they're like, oh, fuck that. You know, you got to go.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
Instead of saying, hey, let's open up another yeah, shop that
absolutely.
You can run. Let's grow your team.
Yes.
Let's boom.
Let's all grow.
People are yeah. limited on their stupidity, yeah. you know, and you they know, don't even know
I tell my agent,
that holds them back.
I tell my agents all the time, you know what I want? I want you to come and tell me, Anthony, I overgrew this office. I want to open an office.
Yes.
Or I want my own. Or I want it. That's what Let's I go. Want them yeah. to tell me. I don't want them to go somewhere else. And I'm like, I'm here to help you. Like, you, the more you make, the better.
That's
you
the
know?
Difference.
So my agents, you know, which we don't get a lot nowadays. They're happy, they're just there. But you don't have that agent anymore that comes and says, I overgrew this office, give me an opportunity, whatever. I mean,
where do you think that hunger went, man? Because people used to be hungry back then. I mean, I remember your time. I mean, I'm hearing your story, it's amazing.
Yep.
Maybe a lot of people understood the system that we have and, you know, start taking advantage of the system and start getting comfortable with the system, with technology, just being, you know, you go to Google and you find out where your nearest, you know, they're giving you free food or free stuff or this or what. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
people got lost in the sauce.
Yeah, I just don't think people think that they have to put in a lot of work to get, you know, to another level
yeah.
because they could find it on YouTube. They can right. find it on Google. And
right. They got and they this think, thing where, you know, it's work-life balance BS.
You know what? I think right now that we're going to start probably seeing a little bit of the hustle mentality come back because a lot of this era that, you know, maybe the past 10 years have been going to Google or going to YouTube. They realize, like, shit, YouTube didn't really help me,
yeah.
you know, with the real hands-on thing, you know?
Yes.
So they're starting to fail in whatever business they got going. And they didn't realize sometimes it takes money to make more money. Sometimes it takes a lot of work to make, you know, something happen. So I think they're coming to that point where they're failing. They're going to start failing. And they're going to have to go adapt. And they're going to have to adapt that. It's not just technology and not just Google and on this. You got to work.
Right.
You got to put in some work. You know,
good old-fashioned work good old always work. Works, bro.
Exactly. Yeah.
People have always, and in the industry, people have always looked for the easier way to make money.
Right.
And, I mean, think about it. When we were growing up, there was those kids that made money fast yeah. and ended up yeah. in prison, you know, or yeah. selling dope or yeah. got right. killed. Or,
right.
There's always people who want that. Exactly. And good old-fashioned hard work, getting belly-to-belly to people. I mean, come on. He was at the swap meets. I was door knocking. Like, we were hustling.
Yeah, yeah.
That hustle, you can't teach people that.
Yeah. I heard one of our agents just say, hey, why don't we just go to the swap meet? And I was like, that gave me chills, man. I'm like, let's bring it back. Let's do it.
Yeah. yeah. Swap meet built us. The yeah. swap meet built us. Then we started going to all the swap meets. We were at, you know, Santa Fe Springs. We were at Paramount. We were at the Banning Swamp, wherever, you know, Alameda, wherever, you know, we had an office, yeah. that office manager, whoever, they would, we would be at the swap meets, you know?
Like it, a must.
We had to, you know, go to the swap meet. We have no money to market.
Right. Yep.
You know? Swami's going to cost you $40.
Mm-hmm. $40 and, you know, what, 10,000 people go through there on a weekend. 20,000 people.
Yeah. All day.
So, but it requires you stand in the sun. Yeah. It requires that you get your shit over there. Mm-hmm. It requires that you get uncomfortable talking to people. And yeah, they're going to say no, but the getting uncomfortable is the part people can't get past.
Yeah. And it's even further. People don't even want to think about being uncomfortable. Now they're just afraid of it. You know, they're not even being uncomfortable. They're just afraid of being uncomfortable.
Right. Right.
They quit before they even start.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Well, they don't want to put it. They just don't want to put in the work, you know?
I mean, you've been a success in multiple areas, right? You went from one thing to something completely different to another thing that's completely different and so on and so forth, right? It's not a fluke that this is in your mindset, right? In the way you carry yourself, the way you live. What's one thing you can tell our audience that to say like, hey, listen, this one discipline or certain disciplines can help you grow? What would those be?
You know what? I think you have to underlive a lot. Like, just because you have, you know, money to, you know, live on a 3-bedroom apartment, but if you could do 2 bedrooms and be okay, do the 2-bedroom. I mean, I have a thing. If I can't buy 3 of a something, I won't buy it, you know? And I like to really underlive, you know, and make sure that, you know.
Is that like a rule?
It's a rule for me, you know.
Like, I mean, if I can't buy 3 Rolexes,
If I can't buy 3 Rolex, I'm not gonna buy it. Okay. You know, if I can't buy 3 Ferraris, I'm not gonna buy it. You know, if I can't buy, you know, I mean, it's just. I mean, it gets bigger, you know.
Yes.
But I mean, it goes to the point where small sometimes too, you know.
Yes. That's where it starts.
That's where it starts. You know, I used to do this thing, like, it's funny, but it actually helped me a lot. I had $100 in my bank account. Okay. So what I did was, like, after I would top it up. Like, so I would be like, okay, if I have $101, I only have $1.
Yes.
Okay. So if I have $156, I only have $56. I can't touch that 100.
Couldn't touch it.
It got to where I, like, what if I have one?
Religiously.
I was like, oh, I'm at 100. I'm at 10,000. Well, 10,000 is my new zero. Ooh. So if I have, you know, 15,000, I only have 5,000. And mentally.
And then you would feel it like shit. My cart's about to decline. I'm almost at.
Yeah, exactly. So I lived like that. And, you know, some people could say he's stingy or whatever. But you know what? It's better to be stingy than be broke, you know?
Right.
Yep. So I learned to save, really, you know, save for emergencies, save for, you know, bad times, and underlive as much as I mean, you say I can live in a mansion like that. But, I mean, why am I going to live there? I mean, if I'm okay right here and be okay, and I know my family's okay and they're going to be okay, and I'm not going to be struggling, I'm not going to put myself in that situation where I'm living at a lifestyle that I'm barely making it every month to live that lifestyle. You know, I'd rather live in a small little home and, you know, being able to pay that home off tomorrow if I wanted to, because I have the money in the bank, but I just choose not to, you know?
Right.
So just learning how to, you know, manage that money, because money's evil, and learning how to obviously have, you know, the money work for you instead of you working for the money and all that. I think a great thing for people to start really paying more attention to.
Got it.
It's not about, you know, sometimes they say it's not about how much money you make, it's how much money you put in your pocket.
Yeah. And it's understanding money. That's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge. Most people, they whatever they get, they want to spend.
Right. I mean, to be able to say,
because they think it's never going to end.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
To be able to say, hey, you know what, Walmart, not right now.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Mm. Not yet.
And everyone's fighting for that opportunity.
Right.
Of course. Of course.
And you know they're going to say, okay,
of course,
I'm ready. Let's go Walmart. And they're going to say, let's do it.
Of course. Yep. At Walmart, we rejected him in March of 2024. And we said, well, hopefully we didn't do something bad. Well, no, they came back in April again asking for the thing. I said,
this
year. This year. We'll try a little couple stores with you guys. So yeah, we were in Walmart at maybe, I think, 10 stores in Texas, and then another 10 here in California. And you know, it did good. We proved to them that the product sells.
Mm-hmm.
But we, you know, obviously it wasn't just my thing, like, oh, we're not gonna go on Walmart. You know, obviously we got the team, We got a, you know, the salespeople. We have the management team that says, are we ready for this? And they're going to tell you, me as a, you know, founder, they're going to be like, are you ready for Walmart? And I have to be like, what possibility do we have that Walmart's going to order 10 containers? It goes, a very high possibility.
Yeah.
So then I got to look and say, is that going to put a dent on me, on this business? And I say, you know what? We're not ready for it. We're just not ready for them. Because I'm not going to jeopardize the other clients and everybody that's, because, you know, we're at Flow, we're, you know, residual clients that are coming in and, you know.
See, that's integrity.
Really. So you have to say, you know, certain things you have to pass on, you know.
Right. Because you could easily be like, you know what, other clients already got this other client.
Yeah, I don't need you anymore, when they were the ones that helped build you up.
Correct. Correct. So.
But you're still concerned for them.
Of course, you have to. I mean, it's what's solid right now. Walmart could be just like, oh, well, you know.
The hype.
Yeah, be a hype, and then it might not work out. And, you know, it's because, you know, there's territories with these stores. Like, it might just work good on the Hispanic side.
Right, right.
And then on, you know, those on another, other states are not going to work. So I'm not going to commit to them until I try the market out good and see if it sells. I mean, I got into stores that they order one time, and that was it. Because it really didn't sell.
It didn't work.
You know? Mm. I mean, I have Kroger. I'm in the Kroger. And I'm only in Kroger's, like, in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working Food for Less over here. And, like, Ralph's. And Ralph's, we're going to be in only in Hispanic chain stores. We're not going to be where, you know, the product's not going to sell.
Right.
So, you know, you have to understand the market and understand what your product is and make sure that you categorize it the right way.
So it's
See, your mindset, you said earlier, like, listen, as long as I have health, I can make shit happen.
Yeah.
Right. And that's been your mindset since you were young.
Yeah.
Right. Where nowadays the youth, any excuse to just give up. This is exactly why we started this podcast, because we just want to create a movement where people don't quit anymore, and they stick to their word. They stick to their grind. Right. And make things happen. Right.
Yeah.
What is it in your discipline that maybe you can give our audience that lets them know, like, hey, listen, start making small changes and it's going to add up?
You know what? A lot of people, they do certain things and they think they got nothing out of it. Okay. So they could go to an event and you could send them, you know, your agents to an event and they're like, we didn't get nothing out of it. But they talk to maybe two or three people. And you know what? Sometimes this type of stuff comes back
and you start connecting
and you're like, if I wouldn't have met that person when I made that decision to go to that event, then probably, you know, I would have never been where I'm at now, because the dots connect.
That's a badass habit. That's a badass. Yes.
Always
worth it.
I've seen situations that I've been involved where I thought I went over here for nothing. And now I'm like,
that's where I met him
back. that person came back, and I'm gonna make some money now, because I'm gonna get something out of, because I went, and I was just, you know, humble enough to go, and you know, just, you never know what your decisions that you make today, how they're gonna affect you 5, 10, 15 years later.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing to have, because it's so easy, like you said, it's so easy to be like, it was a waste of my time. Let me just throw this to the garbage, mental garbage, and never even use it to connect the dots. But if you just keep an open mind, it's going to come back and help you out.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. Always keep your name clean, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't screw over people for pennies.
No.
You know, the industries are very small. People might think at the beginning the industries are huge and nobody will ever find out. No. Industries, and I've been in different ones, and I've been to different, you know, shows and different conferences and things. At the end of the day, these industries are small.
Yeah.
You know, you keep your name clean, and you know, you know, sometimes you're like, man, I could have got this deal if I'd have screwed this guy over or whatever, you know, but they're going to get you eventually. And if you did it the right thing later on, the opportunity is going to come the right way when it's your time.
Bigger.
You know, bigger and better. Absolutely. So, you know, and it's not always, you know, wins, you know. You got to take some losses for sure all the time.
It's been an amazing interview, man.
Great talk. Yeah. Absolutely, man. You have kids?
Yeah. I got three kids. I got a 13-year-old boy And then I have a pair of 6-year-old twins, boy and girl.
Oh, wow.
Boy, girl, twins, yeah.
And how do you manage everything? Businesses, family, life?
Delegating. Got you know, it. You delegate.
I mean, though, you go 1 hour to your bakery. Yeah. That's delegation.
One hour a week. 1 hour a week. You know, you got to find the right people. You got to invest in them, and you got to, you know, go in there with the system, mm-hmm. you know, see exactly what that operator needs from me,
mm-hmm.
and I'll give them that.
Yeah.
And then after that, like, look, you wanted this. This is what you got. I gave it to you. Like, let's go. You know, yeah.
You're a true leader in the community, man. You're a true leader in the community. Well, how many people do you have an estimate saying working for you?
Employees.
About 45 people.
Nice.
Yeah. Not a lot. You know, nowadays you can't really have that many people, you know, and now I have like teams that, you know, maybe they're like third party teams, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, my ramen, my team's in Mexico. In Monterrey, I have my management team there. 5 girls run it with the manager there. My sales rep's in Texas.
Gotta go to Monterrey.
You know? So wait, you have the product selling in Monterrey?
Nope, just the team.
Just the team works out of there?
Just team works out of Monterrey.
They're the ones that do the HEB and all that?
Everything. They manage my inventory. They, you know, the ships coming in from Vietnam. They manage the trucks coming from the port of right here, Long Beach, to Texas or to whatever state we're going. And, the girls there run it. I made a contract with that company,
mm-hmm.
and they run it based on commission, and they get paid for whatever we sell and manage. Yeah.
So you have a lot more people that you work with. But
yeah, I have a lot of, I delegate a lot of work to, you know, if it makes sense, you know, give it, you know.
Why not?
Like, you can't,
we're all
going to
make money.
I mean,
yes.
Yeah,
you can't do it yourself.
Everybody has to make money, you know. Everybody has to make money, and sometimes you're the last one to make money,
mm-hmm.
and that's okay.
But it's growing.
Know? But you're growing it. You know, you got to see these businesses, if they're growing, even if you're not making any money, you're doing something right.
Right.
Okay? If you see that it's just constant, you know, losing and losing and losing, and you don't have, you know, if you don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, because at the beginning, and to grow any business, you have to, you know, invest into the business, and you can't see it as like you're losing that money. You got to see it as it's part of the investment, and it's going to come back. And sometimes it takes a little longer than other times, but you know, if you have the right team, the right vision, then you're going to make it happen, you know. It's going to work. It's going to work. Just don't quit, you know?
Just don't quit.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Right.
You got to have it.
Well, you guys have it, guys. We interviewed Anthony, true leader in the community. It's been an amazing interview, man. If our listeners wanted to, like, find you, where can they find you? What's your handles?
You know what? I'm not really big in social media. I mean, I have my Instagram, Anthony Flores,
mm-hmm.
On Instagram. Same with Facebook. Other than that, I mean, yeah, just find me there. Okay. Ask me whatever, you know what I mean? Reach out to me with any questions or anything that, you know, I'm an open book, you know, very transparent.
We appreciate that. Thank you for offering to the viewers that, you know, to ask questions or whatnot. We appreciate your presence. We appreciate you being here. It was a great interview. Guys, we're on all platforms. No quitters. We're on YouTube, Apple. We're on everything. So,
you guys want to listen to this story and other stories of people that have been through really challenging times and never quit. So that hopefully that can motivate you to get your next big deal. Listen to us at noquitterspodcast.com.
No Quitters Podcast.
Period.
Yeah. On YouTube, on Apple, on podcast, on all platforms.
There you guys have it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.